Yeah, questions. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the worst, because that's kind of.
Yeah, he was supposed to be gone here, but he was bad. And now the ninth. Perfect. I'll check into it. And then I'll start sending them to that, so. And you'll be able to.
Okay, sort of official. Good morning, everyone. Excuse me, roll call, please.
Sorry.
Sorry about that.
Bruce Rinker.
Here.
Dan Moore.
Here.
Two members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Please join us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So as many of you know, we have a few details to take care of. Your Honor.
Good morning. It's my pleasure to be here today to introduce our new member of the board. Yvette is keenly aware of the importance of the Metro Parks to all the residents in our community and the positive economic impact the Metro Parks has on the entire community. She's deeply committed to expanding and improving access to the Metro Parks to every resident in this community, no matter where they live. I'm confident her knowledge and experience will prove to be extremely valuable as a member of the Cleveland Metro Parks Board of Park Commissioners, and we're happy to have her as part of our team. Yvette? I'd like to raise your right hand. I state your name.
I, Yvette Etu.
Do hereby swear.
Do hereby swear.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Ohio.
And the Constitution of the State of Ohio.
And that I will faithfully, honestly, and impartially discharge the duties.
And that I will faithfully, honestly, and impartially discharge the duties.
As a member of the Board of Park Commissioners.
As a member of the Board of Park Commissioners.
Of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
Of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
This I swear.
This I swear.
As I shall answer unto God.
As I shall answer unto God.
Congratulations.
Can you sign that?
Okay.
Gotta sign it.
Today's the 21st.
All right, and let the record reflect that we have a duly appointed and sworn in new park commissioner for the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District. And at this time, let's have the motion regarding her status as officer, and then she will be voting throughout the agenda.
Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Congratulations. Now get to work. So next up, I need a motion to approve with any minutes from our regular meeting of August 17th.
So moved.
Seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
We'll note that Yvette is abstaining from the approval of the minutes.
Great. Sir.
Thank you. We'll
Excellent. Let's make sure we're going in the right direction. From this, you know, this starts beginning to come on. The report for the 8 months ended August 31st, 2023. And we have a new commissioner, so some of the things I'm going to go through may have been said before, but I want to make sure that Commissioner B2 gets the benefit of information that might have been shared in previous months. First off, at a high level, we got our second half settlement from Cuyahoga County fiscal officer, just over $33.5 million. I highlighted this because I wanted to raise this up. $95,958,511 was our total tax collection for this year after the new levy of 2.7 mils. By way of background, when I presented the original budget to this body, it was projected to be 92.7 million. I guess it was a little conservative. Most of us accountants are. So we came in 3.56% ahead of that. So we did better than I anticipated. I think I shared with the commissioners at that time. I was being conservative. We had a new levy. We weren't really sure what was going to come in. And so we did do better than we thought, which that's very, very good news. That just means more revenue to continue to do good work.
Is there any way to track where that bump comes from, or is it just across the board?
It's just pretty much across the board. I would say, Commissioner, a big chunk of it's new construction that we didn't know about. We knew what the values were when we met our projection, but building continues to go on in Cuyahoga County, which is very positive. The other thing I wanted to point out this month, in terms of grants, it's much higher than normal, as you will see. And two things contribute to this. $1.2 million for First Tee, that grant came in, and the first part of the Mandel Foundation grant came in. So that's why that's almost $8 million when it typically runs about $500,000. And you can see here today, I didn't highlight this, but I think kudos should go to Natalie Ronayne and the Development Group. Almost $18 million in grants and donations thus far. So they're just doing a fabulous job.
The tax receipts, what was our expectation for the year? How much we were going to be ahead? It wasn't 20 million, was it?
No,
I thought it was less than that.
The projection for the year was about 14 to 15 dollars.
Okay.
Yeah, and the county used a collection rate.
I apologize. The county was using a collection rate of about 98.5%, which I thought was high. I took that down to 97.5%. So part of it might have been better collection. The other part was new construction.
Okay.
But yeah, we came in about 3 to 5 million better than we thought. And now that's set because of the way tax collections work now. We won't go above that. So the way the reduction factor kicks in, that will in essence be our high water mark, unless there is new construction. The only thing that could change that is if there's tax increment financing or anything like that that happens, we wouldn't get the benefit right of that. But any new construction.
Yeah, I see. Thank you.
A couple other things on page one, and some of this will come up when we do the detail. We're running $27 million ahead of last year at this point, due primarily to property tax and to the work from grants and donations. Expenses have gone up, but we anticipated that. Primarily due to inflation, supply chain, and labor and full staffing. One other thing, we had construction expenses that were sizable this month. What contributes to this, and some of you were with us, Tropical Bears was 1.9 million of that spend this month. The Manikiki Management Center continues to progress, and we'll see that when we talk about golf, was just over 600,000. Cheers had the first dredging, and we also had our first expense related to First Tee, which is happening. So those all happened in the month of August. You can see that our construction expenses to date are higher than last year for a variety of reasons, a number of projects that are going on that we talk about every month. Tropical Bear is probably being the biggest one right now. Now we'll go through the individual departments briefly. First off, the zoo. You can see they had a very good month, slightly ahead of where they were in August of 2022. And they've had a good year to date so far, $114,000. This is just admissions above where we were last year, through 8 months. That's 2.1%. That doesn't, and I wanted to point this out because some people might say, well, geez, 2%. But given what inflation is and people not being able to do as much, not being able to go as many places, the fact that the zoo is running ahead in terms of admissions, 2.1% is a compliment to what they do and what they mean. People are still turning out to see our zoo. And that's a good thing, because you're not seeing that at all, what I would call entertainment and amusement venues. The Zoo Society, you'll notice it was zero last year in August. That's 1.1 million. Last month in July, and Commissioner E2 wasn't here, this was about $1 million, and this was zero. It's all due to timing, because if you look at year to date, we're about right in line with where the Zoo Society is when we got their second quarter payment. So we're $70,000 ahead of our share of the Zoo Society's revenue coming to us this year. But this was highlighted just so we could, we talked about the timing last month. There it is right there. And you can see construction expenses at the zoo, 6.5. This was that tropical bears I talked about in this month. And most of that is tropical bears year to date. And it's open now. Susie Bear Hollow is fabulous, but that's the biggest driver in that $6.4 million. Next is golf. And I feel like I say this every month, they are just absolutely crushing it in golf. They're still ahead in August from where they were in August of 2022, which was a good month, almost $1 million for the month of August. The rounds played in August were 3,343 rounds higher than in 22. So rounds are up this year, this month, for this year, 6%. When you look at rounds year to date, they're up 18%, which is what constitutes that $693,000. They're just doing an absolutely great job. So revenues, when I say rounds are up 18%, revenues are up 17.1%. And I'm going to give the exact number because Joe and I like to talk about this and look at it. 39,574 rounds higher this year than last year through 8 months. And I think Joe used the, if you wanted a frame of reference, that would be every weekend at Big Met for a year, right? Something like that is how many rounds were up so far this year. And you can see that our revenue year to date up just over $980,000. That's 38.2%. So revenue is going up. Expenses are going up commensurate, but yet we're still driving a bigger number at the bottom. Our construction expense to date, we talked about Manikiki. There's the 600 or so thousand that was experienced in August. The primary driver there for 1.8 is the Manikiki Management Center, which constitutes about $1.5 million of the spend to date there. But all in all, there's not a whole lot more I can say about golf other than they're just absolutely having a great year. Compliments to everybody involved with that operation. Here's some individual numbers. They were in your report. I did want to point out Sleepy Hollow. And the biggest reason is they're our best performer right now. When you look at where they were last year, 451,000, now 796,000 in terms of revenue to date. That's the highest percentage increase of any of our individual courses. Almost every course is running ahead of where it was last year, except for a few, such as Mastic. And part of that's due to the way we staff this. We just have a full-time staff where we might have had a part-time staff. But as I looked at each individual course, I had no concerns whatsoever with how any course was doing, the number of rounds were played, with the revenues or expenses, where they're all doing well. And you can say year-to-date, $3.5 million on the operating side, which is just about $1 million higher than it was last year. Enterprise. And you can see that in this month, $634,000 compared to $426,000 in August of 2022, $694,000 year to date ahead. That's 32.3%. And when we get to the individual pages, you'll see the biggest driver of all this right now is Merwin's. Merwin's is just absolutely doing extremely well. They've had a very good year thus far. You want to be careful not to jinx things, as they say. But Merwin's is doing extremely well. And when you look at the blue number down here in the bottom, 560,000, that's the surplus year to date. That's about an 11% year to date operating margin. When you look at revenue to expense, last year, the operating margin was 6.8. So not only are we driving more revenue, we're getting more efficient, we're controlling expenses. So 6.8 here, 11% here, $275,000 ahead of where we were in the enterprise operation. And On the individual page, this will show you what I was talking about. There you can see Merwin's last year at this point was being slightly subsidized. This year, it's positive $248,000, 3 months. And you can see that the other numbers as we go across, everyone seems to be doing pretty consistent with where they were. I was really intrigued by East 55th Marina, how almost consistent the revenues and expenses are year to year, 3 months. It's almost scary how that operation is just hitting on all cylinders the way it operates. I did want to mention on the last page, we talk about this every so often, that parking had a very good month and it's having a very good year. Again, very consistent. Expenses are minimal. As long as there are events and people are parking in our spaces, we generate revenue that can be used for other purposes in the park. Yes, Commissioner?
If you go back and look at the 55th Street Marina and you looked at the depreciation on docks, this will be an expense that'll be coming up. You know, it's maybe a 15-year cycle or something like that. It's rather substantial. And I wonder if we should reflect that somehow, understanding that we'll have that expense. We'll also have it at Wendy Park or at Whiskey Island and also at the Edgewater. I wonder if there's some way to reflect that, because that's millions of dollars.
You're right. It is a sizable expense, Commissioner. We reflect that when we do our year-end conversion. We report on a cash basis throughout the year. When we do our annual audited financial statements, we calculate depreciation and gap that up. But I could estimate what those expenses are throughout the year, because you're right, docks and other things, we would have a depreciation expense we report on a gap basis.
Yeah, much higher than a golf course or something like that.
I would think so. I'd have to look at the individual elements within, but even items at a golf course would depreciate higher than others. For example, we're putting in a watering system in the golf courses now. Life expectancy on that, is it 10 years? Is it 20 years? Could have a big impact. But what I can do, Commissioner, is if it's the pleasure of the Board of Commissioners to take a look at what some of the larger depreciation expense items are and do a report for you.
Maybe just an individual report. I don't think we need to reflect it all the time, but I think we have to keep that in mind, because we've got hundreds of docks.
Yes.
That will cost, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 each to repair.
Exactly.
To redo.
Joe Rozek, who's with us, not just the docks, but the equipment that's used around the docks is also very expensive and has to be replaced. Some of it's being replaced now, but then it's replaced every 50 years, 40 years.
Right, like our lift at our home at Miss Marina, we do want to see this way. So planning for that is a good point. We use both funds and restricted funds to put some of the profits into, so that we can build that up. So when those large expenses come, we have some money there. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at Commissioner Rinker or President Rinker. I guess I can go ahead and do that, and in the next month or two have a separate analysis for you, just kind of what depreciation runs on an annual basis, so that you have some frame of reference as we go through these reports. But that's a very good idea. Thank you.
But just to be clear, you had indicated it is trued up at the end of the year when you put the financial statements together. You true up the depreciation
exactly, as
part of the gap. Financial statement. So there will be at some point in time during the year where this body does see the gap financial statements.
But I think it would be interesting to look at what the math really is now. I just can't believe how expensive these water related construction projects have become.
But Commissioner Ito, you are correct. We do gap up at the end of the year. Ohio's a unique state in that statutorily we have to budget and report out to boards on a cash basis. That is required. You can also then supplement that, but then you have to do your annual financial reporting on a GAAP basis. So it's just the way the state is required to report by the auditor of state.
So GAAP would look at the depreciation of the docks over what we spent back when we did it last, which is a much smaller number than it would be now.
That's correct. As well as accruing all of our liabilities, as well as we've got various receivables that may be coming in. We have numerous grant receivables where we're awarded a grant. It's a reimbursement basis, so we spend the money in the front end. So you'll see expenses, and you don't see it in this report, not knowing that on the back end, we're going to get $2 or $3 million returned to us from the grantor once we provide the documentation. So that's all captured at the end of the year. I believe that's what Commissioner was reporting to, or I'm sorry, referring to when we report that, when you get our audited statements. If there's no other questions, that's everything I have. Thank you.
You good? All right. New business.
The first item of new business is the 2023 budget adjustment number 9.
Thank you, Joe. Commissioners, on page 10, you will see the request for budget adjustment number 9. It totals $13,328,645. I would point out that the detail for this is on pages 44 to 46, which are on pages, and adjustment E, which is on page 46, is over almost $13 million of that. It relates to an increase for capital construction, Cleveland Lakefront Bikeway from the Mandel Foundation grant, and $8 million for construction for Gordon Park improvements, again, covered by new revenue from the Mandel Foundation. So it seems like a large adjustment, but $13 million is due to the Mandel Foundation grant. But I would ask your approval of budget adjustment.
Move the motion.
Do I have a second?
Oh, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The second item up for action is the authorization of the 2024 tax levy amounts and rates. Wade?
Thank you, Joe. Commissioners, this is to just ask you to ask the county fiscal officer to again levy the 2.7 mils that were approved last year. They are needed, and we will know the estimated amount to be received. We get that from the County Budget Commission in December. So that's why the amount is not in, but we're asking that we again levy the same amounts as we always have.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The third item is a request to submit a grant through the ODNR H2 Ohio program, most recently funded our East 72nd Street floating wetlands. This would be a grant where there would be no match. It would be for $750,000 to address runoff erosion, some stream bakes stabilization, and to prevent sedimenting in of a Category 3 wetland in the Rising Valley area of that reservation. If there's no questions, the action is at the bottom of page 12.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The third item, fourth item up for action is GMP2 for the Gorilla Project. If you remember, GMP1 was for the demolition of the new property that we acquired at the zoo. This would be to remediate that property and also do some studying for the HVAC system that would be eventually in the new Gorilla facility. So there are two parts to it, the wire site remediation, which would cost $566,457.06, and then bringing on someone to assist with HVAC and design for the eventual new construction for $106,699, for a total of $673,156.06. Both of those combined would be GMP2 for the Gorilla Project. If there aren't any questions, action falls for that on page 13.
Move the motion.
Page 14.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Last action item is, Sean to kind of come up and talk about this briefly. It's a unique opportunity. We were recently not able to apply for bridge funding through this source, and we recently have. So this is a byproduct of those applications to fix a bridge. Really a culvert in the Garfield Millstream area. And Sean's going to briefly go through it.
Thank you, Joe. Good morning, commissioners. What I'm going to briefly talk to you about is a project that has been a long time in the making, but what's in front of you today is actually a request for engineering, a sole source to approve a contract with an engineering firm. But want to give you a little bit more background before we ask for that approval. So big picture, we're doing a lot of work in Garfield Reservation. We've got the pond project, we've got Iron Springs, we've got a new program center that'll be coming out of the ground soon. But we've been also working with ODOT. They are replacing what's called the White House Bridge, which is a major bridge over the railroad just to the east side of the park. So where we are here, I'll give you a quick we'll zoom in to our location here at Garfield. And you can see on the north side, this is the White House Bridge that goes over the CSX railroad tracks right here. and why this is important to us. This bridge component right here has not been replaced for a very, very long time. In our master planning process, we talk about the need for improvements here, that talk about the need for the trail connections that we want to make sure continue down Broadway and then emanate into the neighborhoods. Separately, we've brought to you before this Scarfield Boulevard connector. So all of these projects are kind of working in concert in addition to the connection with the Raise Grant up to the Morgana Run. So we are really putting Garfield on the map, if you will, with all these connections from literally every side of the park. With that, in ODOT's project, we're not going to go through all the engineering, but they've looked at a few different components on how to rebuild this bridge. Right now, it kind of silts, it sits on stilts right next to the park. But what we've been successful in doing with them is not only working out how to grade and incorporate the new bridge into the park, but most importantly, constructing a multi-use path on the bridge deck. And that represents millions of dollars of investment that otherwise would not be accomplished and had we not had the partnership with ODOT. What their project does not include, it does not include the replacement of the Mill Creek culvert that is on our property. It includes the portion on under their bridge. So we've been trying to work with them to incorporate the replacement of this culvert, which is many decades old, into the project. We've finally been successful through these bridge funds. But what we'd like to do then is utilize the same engineer. So we have a process, a sole source process, where we can utilize that same engineer so that they will pick up the design that ODOT is doing, will replace this section of culvert. Then we will pick up and pay for this section of culvert with the newly awarded grant. But again, with some seamless engineering and also bidding them at the same time and together, we feel that we can get some economies of scale there. So that's the background, or the backdrop for the project. And the request is for the sole source for the approval to partner with AECOM to perform the engineering services.
Why wouldn't they have to do the whole thing? I don't understand that. It's
so what we've come to learn with all this interesting ownership of infrastructure is that they are truly only responsible for what is under that bridge deck. And we are responsible for what is within our bounds. We went months and months trying to convince them that the right thing to do was just pay for our portion. They said no, respectfully. So then what we did was we worked hard to get into the program. The program is then going to pay for 90% of it.
Okay. I understand.
But you mentioned there was a grant, though, that's covering this. Is covering the whole amount?
The grant is covering about 90% of the costs. And we were, as Joe said, ineligible for those grants until about a year and a half ago. We've been successful. We're 4 for 4 so far with submitting to that grant program.
It's a big deal.
Good. Yeah, that's good.
Great.
Thank you, Sean. If there's no further questions, approval is on the bottom of page 16 to enter into a contract with AECOM for $253,532.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Next, we have tabulation and award of bids, RFPs, co-ops, and single sources. A longer list than normal, a myriad of items that are in there, software, vehicles, RFP for the dinosaur experience that was at the zoo that will be coming back. And other items as well that all can be found in the report. Approval for all of these as a whole is on page 17.
Can I ask one question on the dinosaur thing? How did that work out financially?
Andy, you could speak to the financing of when it was
2 years. Did we have it for 2 years last time?
Sure, that we had
The last year that we had a dinosaur experience was in year 2020. And so clearly we had a decreased amount of attendance that year due to COVID, but we did have about a 35% penetration rate through that experience that year. The previous time before that was about 5 years prior. So what we're doing is we are looking to bring that back next year and the following year, and we're going to be conservative with our penetration rate of about 25% of our guests the first year and about 20% the following year.
But the 20 and 30% penetration rate, what does that mean in dollars?
That means that in
2020, what that means in dollars is what we're projecting that we'll bring in is about 170 the first year and about 120 the second year of revenue.
Okay, so it does, it will cost, probably.
Yes, yep. And in 2020, we brought in about 700 thousand in revenue that year.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, so we will have sponsorship to offset the cost.
Okay, so we'll come out ahead.
Yes, we'll have a revenue gain off of those experiences.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Any other questions?
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Next, approval of vouchers and payroll.
Thanks, Joe. Commissioners, on page 41, I'm going to get to so we have it. You'll see resolution 23-09-140 for voucher board transfers and ACH debits totaling $16,538,309.39. These have all been reviewed for compliance with the bylaws of Board of Park Commissioners and the revised code, and I would ask for approval.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And then on page 42, you have resolution 23-09-141. Again, for vouchers and payments. In this case, it's to Arborware, and it's for the vouchers for the month of July and the month of August. And it totals $162.75.
And I'll abstain here.
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
And now we move to our public comments. Marty?
Morning.
Morning.
Even as I welcome our new commissioner, I am concerned about how close Metro Park's ties to downtown are. Since I'm sure you've been duly warned, you won't be shocked to hear my criticism. Metro Park's emphasis on downtown Cleveland obviously goes beyond trails to include encouraging development. That's appropriate for the downtown power players, but it is not a role for Metro Parks. Turnover of commercial and residential space shows the fluctuating demand that constantly looks to tax benefits to fix. But the tax benefits expire and costs for these projects will come home to roost just as they start to age, and builders will walk away, leaving the city with more debt and less money to go around. Rinse and repeat. If we just had a new stadium or a bridge. Crime, education, homelessness are relentless, with lead poisoning contributing to two of them. Without jobs, crime becomes a career. Too few police due to these issues and widespread difficulty in recruiting. Fix these problems and the city can move forward. Don't, and it won't. A boardwalk sounds like a finishing touch, not a solution needed now. And Metro Parks doesn't need to be negotiating with sleazy clubs and others to enable an additional trail. Cleveland is not struggling. People are not leaving due to a lack of trails. Meanwhile, the zoo's constant need for new entertainment is something Metro Parks itself encouraged, with an endless stream of new special events, marketing funded by numerous commercial sponsors. Animals have become a mere backdrop, although definitely better housed and with more mental stimulation than before. Zoos are expensive, and occasional events can be special. Too many just dilutes the impact. The future of wildlife is a wonderful motto, but if you don't encourage folks to slow down, observe animals and their behavior and needs, then they won't make the long-term commitment needed. Explain what and why you altered the exhibits, what they should watch for. Videos make good eye candy, but folks these days are already quick to move on. Figuring out how to keep them engaged and observant would be a real service for them and for the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have anyone else? Sir.
Morning.
Morning.
Are you, have any relatives in West Virginia?
No, I don't. None that I know of, at least.
Are you sure?
That's a loaded question.
Well, my name's Gene Moore. I'm a retired biology teacher, former U.S. Coast Guard licensed captain for 25 gross ton vessels, and charter captain on Lake Erie. I remain an avid fisherman, and in recent years, I've primarily utilized the Rocky River ramps in my quest for the elusive walleye. I am here to make you aware of some serious problems affecting the safety of people using those ramps, because if these problems are not promptly addressed and corrected, I am confident that someone will soon be seriously hurt or possibly killed. Not if, but when that occurs, it would likely open the Metro Parks to serious litigation, I would imagine, not being a lawyer myself. To address these concerns, I have previously had discussions with the kayak livery at the ramps, contacted U.S. Coast Guard regarding safety issues on the river itself, which of course is out of your domain, and also have discussed my concerns with Metro Parks Police Department, Mr. Schill, and Mr. Bobinchek. In fact, last summer I was assured that they were aware of the problems and that some new signage was going to be installed for this season. The problems, however, cannot be all corrected with signage. And since no signage has appeared, no changes have occurred, the danger has not lessened this year, and that's what, in part, why I'm here today. Sadly, a recent phone call has left me with the distinct impression that some in power feel the problems cannot be solved because of insufficient personnel for enforcement and the fact that people don't read signs. I don't buy those excuses. After 39 years in the classroom, I know that any problem can be solved if one is willing to put forth the required effort. So this morning, I'm here to make you aware of these problems and to ask for your attention to this dangerous and frustrating situation. I wish to propose some possible solutions and improvements which can easily be made before someone is hurt or killed through either an accident or injured due to a loss of someone's emotional control. With some relatively minor changes, the facilities at the launch can be vastly improved and made safer and more enjoyable for all concerned. While the problem is multifaceted, it can be summarized as seriously unsafe launch area conditions, rampant parking lot chaos, and animosities between boaters and the paddleboard kayaker segments due to violations of launch etiquette and navigational rules of the road, a breakdown in common courtesy, and an overall lack of common sense. Much of the problem stems from the current layout of the facilities and ramps, coupled with inadequate signage and supervision. I'm assuming that maybe some of you are not familiar visually with what Rocky River is like on our ramps.
I am.
You are. Okay. Well, I brought something. I didn't realize there were this many. Maybe 5 copies. If you could share the between them, false authority here.
Don't kid yourself.
I know what they look like, but that's
yeah. Okay. It's still
okay.
I like this. Look at the picture.
We'll share.
I'm not too old for the computer eating. That's the best I can do. I really believe there's some serious issues down there that need to be addressed. It is frustrating for those of us who want to launch a boat. When a friend of mine, who's a pretty level-headed guy, was about ready to get out of my boat and take on somebody and beat crap out of it, it's getting too bad. I mean, it's just frustrating to boaters. It's dangerous for kayakers and paddleboarders. So the situation, in my opinion, needs to be addressed, or something's going to happen bad real soon. Now, if you look at this first page, if you're not familiar, the different colors, black is the approach way that you would come in to launch, the black line at the bottom. You come in off of the parkway, around turn, run down that big long path, hook a curve, you come to the ramps. There's a set of slots right there that are shown. Red would be the egress in that area up into the parking lot. Now, where you park would depend on how many people are down there at that particular time. Might hit the first slot, might have to go up, hit the second slot, or go over to the third slot. It's a nice parking facility. It's really a nice potential facility. So the red is to get you to the parking lot. Then after your parking lot, the orange line is the path that you would take to get back over to the black line to go around to the ramps again to pick up your boat.
And these aren't kayaks. These are regular boats on trailers. But they're.
I have to go to classes.
Yeah.
I happen to have gotten my, license and so forth. But most of these people don't. You don't have to take a class.
Yeah.
It's like putting drivers on the road. Never been to a driver's ed class. They've never read the rules. They have no clue. And that's what we're facing. You have a powered motor, have to maintain a certain speed to maintain steerage. Okay? And here comes some guy cutting across your bow because of where the launch is at for kayaks. As you're coming into the slip. This is, I had a guy that came across my front, here to your desk, as I was coming right at, the dock was there, slip was there. He came out of the launch up here and right across in front of me. Now, at some point.
So the concern.
At some point, somebody's going to get hurt. That's, I have dozens and dozens of episodes over the last 4 or 5 years. But I see it too much every time out. All the boaters are griping about it. You have to understand the situation there at the ramp, how it's set up. Because that's part of the problem, is a physical layout of what's down there.
So can I just interrupt for a second?
Yeah.
So you mean it's the kayak people are using the trailer launch interchangeably?
I'll show you some. I got some pictures of what's going on for you. Okay, if you bear with me for a few minutes.
Yeah. Okay.
Just real quickly, you can look at you can keep these packets and look at them after. I'm finished. But if you go to page one with the pictures, that's a ramp overview if you're not familiar with down there. Okay. Right now, there are two launch and two recovery ramps because one ramp is tied up for kayak launch. I don't know how you launch from a ramp into a kayak. You can't do it. You can't step off of a dock and into a kayak. Mm-hmm. It's physically not possible, okay? So one dock is being wasted, and when you have a storm on Lake Erie and you have all those boats out there, you need to get them off the water quickly. That dock is a boat dock. It's not a kayak dock. It should be made a boat dock, as I'll point out later, okay? So right now there are two of each. The first two as you come around the corner are recovery, the next two are launch. Okay, so we have four docks there. You'll note, if you look at picture B, the length of the docks are relatively short. I was real happy, Mr. Moore, to hear you talking about the boat docks a little earlier. It is an expensive situation, there's no doubt about that, maintaining good boat docks. These are excellent docks. However, they're too short. Okay, they need to be about a half section longer for this reason. You can bring in one boat to the dock for recovery. You have to allow space for the trailer to back in. So there's the trailer, the boat. There's not enough space for a second boat to come in and get ready, okay, and walk all the way up the parking lot to get his trailer to be back there in a reasonable amount of time to keep a fast flow going. Okay. When you're down there and that parking lot's 2/3 full of boat trailers, that's a lot of boats out there when a storm comes in from the west. They got to get off the water. It's the only safe thing that you can do. Okay. So anyway, you'll notice on the picture B, there's no signage whatsoever on any of those poles. There's no signage indicating down there from the river which ramp is an out ramp or an in ramp. No signs about etiquette, what you should do, you know, move the boat up when the trailer, you know, there's simple signage things that could solve a lot of the problems.
If I could interject, only because we're taking this very seriously, but there's a lot of detail here.
Right.
I suspect the three of us are not going to help a lot directly. We want to understand the problem, but my question for Joe, is there someone, I mean, has anyone sat down? Have you talked with anyone and gone through these with anyone within the park? You indicated that you made contact.
I talked to Mr. Schill and Mr. Bobcheck a couple of times on the phone, rather lengthy.
How about a face-to-face meeting?
No.
Yeah, I think reasonably we should sit down together with our risk manager and go through this in detail. We'll set up a meeting. And
well, I just...
No, this is serious. I mean, the way you...
The main reason for coming down, Dave, because I don't get up this early to go fishing most times. And since that traffic coming in here, you guys have my admiration if you do that all the time. I could not take it. But
you get my point? I mean, what...
I understand. Yeah. I didn't know how much time I would get.
We don't really put a limit on it, but I can see just the detail that you've gone through here. This really takes somebody, I think, who's got, one, the level of expertise to understand both the layout, the construction issues going forward. But I mean, this could be pretty serious.
Let's just say I felt more or less I was the goat banging his head into the wall.
I hear you.
Okay? And yeah. I'm not one to do that. I'm one to solve a problem. And this is a problem. Okay, it ruins my day, it ruins other people's days, and worse, it's a safety hazard. I mean, I sit down there, I'll give you just a couple quick examples, and I'll shut up and, you know.
No, this is good. No, we appreciate it.
I'm coming up, and this is out of your domain, but this is the stuff we face. I'll tell you one in your domain. I came around, okay, with my truck, pull up. Started backing up the trailer. Now, imagine you're looking in two side mirrors, okay, trying to get along the ramp. I'm pretty good at it. I've been doing it a number of years, but it still takes concentration. You get people walk out on the sidewalk because the way this is laid out. Walk out behind the trailer and you're backing up. One time I came over the crest, okay, because you can't see down to the water. Mm-hmm. And here there's a kayaker came in and was squatting down at the water's edge with his kayak, getting ready to get in the first recovery slip. Because the sign at the top doesn't say boats only. It says recovery. I got people sitting in those slots. I got pictures in it. 20 minutes I was down there taking pictures. One car occupied the boat recovery slip. They had ladders out, deflating inflatable kayaks, you know, doing us. And then in one beside it is another guy with a kayak on a trailer. Now, if he's got it on the trailer, I have no problems with him using my ramp. I'm paying $30 for it. But kayakers aren't paying anything for some reason, which is another issue I would like to address at some point. But they're using my ramp I paid for. I go over the hill. And I see him, luckily, squatted down at water's edge.
Wow.
Well, I kept going at him. I was going to run his butt out of there, and I did. He looked up, saw that thing coming at him. This is the part that scares me. People are getting tired of running into these situations. I want to go down and go fishing with my friend. We have a good time. That's the way I relax. I don't want to have to deal with problems that can be simply solved by signage and making some physical corrections in the facility, which, given the budget I'm seeing up there, wouldn't cost all that much money.
We get the point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think your point is very well taken, but it has to be specifically looked at. And clearly, you can't have a boat launch and a kayak launch in the same place, right in the same location. We can solve that, but it would be great if you could sit down with maybe get Joe, get one of your guys to take a look at that.
Yeah, I'm retired, so.
And we're.
After lunch.
As long as it's not early morning.
After lunch.
We're delighted that you came to tell us about this.
So, can you give me somebody?
Gene, if this is your correct number here, we'll give you a call, we'll set up a meeting that meets your expectations, and we'll sit down. Yep, 6067-823.
Call me anytime, probably, it won't recognize the number, so just leave a message.
Perfect.
We'll be fine, you tell me the contact, I'll be happy to do that.
Will do.
But I didn't know exactly what to expect coming down here.
Well, no, you laid it out, so we appreciate.
I apologize if I took up too much of your time, but I'm really concerned about what I see going on down here. I give you one last one, and it's out of your domain, but this is what we face using the facility, because there's not adequate signage. I will give the, I don't know their technical name, the kayak littering people there, 41, whatever it is, something. We talked to them a couple of years ago, my buddy and I, for 30 minutes, talked to the guy that was running the place that day. And we saw some nice, well, I think they saw some nice change because of that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's not his kayaks and paddleboard that's the main problem. It's all these people that get no education. But he does have a problem, because he's teaching these people on one side of the exit path out of the ramps, and they cross over into the trees and they cross back. And you're coming out of there, pulling up a trailer, coming out, hitting up the parking lot, and you got people walking back and forth in front of it. There's all kinds of situations like that, but the worst one really crossed my cookies this year is down there under the first big bridge. Okay, there's a paddleboard in the middle of the stream, dead middle. Boat's going down, boat's coming up. There's a girl laying on her belly, and a guy laying on his back, and his head is on her rump, and the two of them are asleep. In the middle of the stream, with power boats going within mere feet of them on either side. This is why we visit the Coast Guard here soon. I talked to them before, but I'll be visiting them. Because when those big boats come out down there, somebody's eventually gonna get run over. And it ain't pretty what a prop does. And it's the frustration. We go down for a day of fishing, fun, camaraderie, some good eating afterwards. And you come home, you're just like, you wanna pound somebody. You know, it's what you have to put, and it's so simple to solve, I think. I'm not even here.
We definitely got the message. Thank you. And something will be done about this. I understand completely what you're talking about.
So I'm not an engineer, but I think that some of the things that are in that packet could be done without vast expense.
Yes,
it would greatly help, just like what the kayak littering man did. It helped take a lot of them out of the middle of the river. That made it safer for those people who don't know what they're doing and come down there and want to enjoy the day on the river, you know, on the water.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
And there's an 85% chance we're related.
I'll bet it's higher than that.
Swords are related.
I'm starting to believe you. Anybody else? Yes.
I think I need to bring a packet next time. And I have been one of those kayakers, I will just say, like out there, like, wait, where am I?
No, wait a second. Yeah. And don't you two start something.
Good morning. My name is Gillian Prater Lee, and I work with the United Residents of Euclid Beach at the Euclid Beach Mobile Home Community. I've had the pleasure of getting to know the residents of the mobile home park over the past several months, working closely with them to organize rallies, petitions, benefit concerts, potlucks, meetings, so on and so forth, all in an effort to create a better outcome for residents whose lives have been left in limbo since February, really. The residents of Euclid Beach have always pursued two goals: equitable compensation for those who wish to leave The mobile home park is, as I'm sure many of you know, the only thing that the Western Reserve Land Conservancy is required to do in this situation is give people 180 days notice to leave their homes. And residents have also advocated for a compromise for those who wish to stay in some sort of reduced footprint mobile home park or a resident owned community in another larger lot in the neighborhood or something to keep residents together versus people just being displaced out into wherever. To the first point, residents have advocated for the Western Reserve Land Conservancy to follow the Uniform Relocation Assistance Act. For those who don't know, the Uniform Relocation Assistance Act, it's a federal standard that says if you take any sort of federal money on a project that displaces people from their homes, there's very specific amount of relocation assistance and compensation that those residents are required to receive before they're displaced. And I know last month, a member of the United Residents of Euclid Beach, William Hart, came here and shared his concerns about the URA to this board. I'm here to say that residents are still living in limbo around the future of their lives. The Land Conservancy has not committed to following this Uniform Relocation Act. They've hinted at it, they've gestured at it, they've talked about it, but they have not provided any sort of public commitment to ensuring that for residents who are being displaced, they have any sort of equitable compensation and relocation in the future of their housing. So I wanted to make that point. I wanted to encourage you all to kind of continue to communicate around this and to make your position known around equitable compensation for residents who are being displaced. To that second and broader point around some sort of compromise for residents who want to stay together in the neighborhood. The second goal of residents has always been a compromise where a portion of land could be set aside for residents to remain in their community. And I would ask, would Cleveland Metro Parks support some sort of plan where a portion of the land at the Euclid at what will be this large park, just some small portion of this land could be set aside for residents who wish to remain in that area. So thank you for taking the time.
Thank you.
We agree that people are entitled to just compensation. It's a threshold issue.
Thank you.
Do we have anyone else? Sir.
Hello, my name is Anthony Beard. I'm a resident of Euclid Beach Mobile Community. I also wanted to tell this gentleman that I'm one of those kayakers at the worst.
Now listen.
However,
you sound like you have enough sense to be on the right side.
Exactly. Most real true kayakers and canoers are very leery of being flipped over by the current that's produced when power boats come through. So they're smart enough to stay over. And the rule of the land is the power boats have the right of way on the water. So thank you. And this brings me into what I wanted to say is that's one of those innovative experiences I had a chance to experience through the Metro Parks. A naturalist at the Metro Parks many, many years ago had canoeing trips right off of Lake Erie in Euclid Beach, and me and my children would go and participate in these types of activities, of the many activities that I've had a chance to experience there at the Metro Parks. I talked about that the last time I came here, I believe, was in July. And other innovations that the Metro Parks have brought to not just Euclid Beach, but to the whole community. For instance, my son goes to school in Shaker Heights school system, and one of the innovations that the Metro Parks did was to keep a camera on, I believe it was a bald eagle, and their school monitored it. They gave us a link, and they went mm-hmm. through and they wrote reports on it and things of that nature. So those are interesting innovations that the Metro Parks brings forth. And so with that in mind, I want to say that the United residents of Euclid Beach are very appreciative of any assistance that they can receive from any organizations, individuals, gestures, and things of that nature. But no matter what compensation you hear floating around in the media and things that are not promised, but just, well, we might do this, we might do that, you can't put a price tag on a person's home, whether you live in Strongsville, whether you live in Euclid, whether you live in Westlake, or whether you live in Euclid Beach. You can't put a price tag on it. No number of monies would be just compensation. It's basically a compromise. And so with that in mind, I want us to encourage you to use your visionary skills and your visionary position as an organization to look at our alternative plan. And at the next meeting, I'm going to be able to give you a packet that can take it from the conceptual state that we're talking about, just talking about it, and give you something really to look at. For instance, in this new conceptual alternative plan, I can see a vision of us having a mixed home community that may have innovative, off-grid, self-sustaining homes. It might even have innovative container homes. It could have some of the existing newer mobile manufactured homes and other tiny homes and other innovations on a 21st century mobile reduced footprint community. And it only, we have 28 acres that you ultimately are going to be the end users of. I can, as somebody who's lived there for 17 years and has gone to Euclid Beach Park, to Wildwood Park, I take account when my kids and I go there, and it's 25, 30 cars. Every time I go, I take account. Every time. 25, 30, 12, 15, 17. One time it was like 47 cars. Every time I go, I take account just to say, you know, it's just a capacity issue where we need this big, huge park, because quiet as it's kept, this east side park that wants to be developed, it's already up at Euclid Creek, about 5 minutes from there. So, you know, it's not really about that, and I'm not here to split hairs about that. I'm here to talk about asking you to be more visionary about a mixed home community with electric vehicle hookups, maybe RV hookups, and a communication and a commitment between the residents who live there in a resident-owned community with the Metro Parks to do tours, bicycle safety hub, boulder safety hub, things of that nature. I just want to come here and basically reiterate what other people may have said or will say in the future and say, we can do this. This is the 21st century. This is not 1800. This is 2023 going into 2024. And this is something I think we can do together with the Metro Parks in a joint collaboration with the United Residents of Euclid Beach. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have anyone else?
Good evening, Chairman and board members. I was here last month and, on behalf of the Euclid Beach Mobile Park and myself and Anthony, who lives there as well. I've been there for 17 years. We'd like to thank you all for voicing your opinion about your concerns as to how we're treated and the decisions of how they should deal with us in the transferring us out of the mobile park into another area. I looked at a place directly across the street from the mobile park, which used to be the Dave's grocery store. For some strange reason, they closed that down and we had nowhere to go shopping. We would have to go a few more miles away to shop, but they closed that Dave grocery store down. But it could have been done for a good reason, because that same site could be transformed over into a park where we could live at. And if they need, you guys need that park to do whatever reasons and building, whatever you're going to do, directly across the street is an empty vacant lot, Big Days grocery store just sitting there. I called the people, they used to have a for sale sign on the front of it, and I called them and asked them who actually purchased this this building. And they said a private owner purchased. I said, well, what are they going to do with it? They said, nobody knows what they're going to do with it. So that took me back to when they purchased the Euclid Beach Mobile Park. When I talked to them, they told me that they purchased, they spent $5.8 million in purchasing the Euclid Beach Mobile Park. Then they said they don't know what they're going to do with the Euclid Beach Mobile Park. Well, that kind of confused me, because who spent $5.8 million and don't know what they're going to do? And so now they're moving us out of our homes and saying that they're going to just take our, where we lived at, and give it to you guys as to add on to the a metro park. And that's kind of like, well, what about us? What do you actually do with us? One of the ladies got her house approved, her home approved. And to you guys, that may be, that house is worth nothing, but to her, it's worth everything. They approved, they appraised her house for $8,000 and told her they're going to give her, put her in assisted living or something like that. How can you do a person like that? A human being, no matter what our status is in the society, we're still human. And that should be taken in consideration, especially in moving us out of where we plan to die at. I have 5 kids buried in my backyard, and they're going to dig them up. And well, when I say kids, they're my cats. But they've been with me for 19, 18, 17. He got pretty late, like a 5 kids. But they are my cats. I had 5 cats. I lived there for 17 years, and I had 2 of them when I moved there. And the other 3 came after I moved there. But they all passed away. But I buried them in the backyard. Neatly, they buried right there. And that place is a sanctuary for me. But I realized that I'm going to have to give it up one day soon because of what's happening. And but I want to be treated with respect. I want to be treated with just like everybody else. No matter what it is, you want to be treated with some respect and dignity and transferring from one place to another. And that's all we're asking at the Euclid Beach Mobile Park. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do we have anyone else? All right, we thank you. And we move on to our information briefing.
Thank you, commissioners. We have one information briefing item, 2023 reservation plan updates. The staff, especially Kelly Kaufman, who's about to present, takes great pride in getting feedback both from the community and internal staff in different departments to structure what type of improvements we're going to make in our parks in the future. And Kelly's going to go in detail into that process and specifically talk about Acacia, Euclid Creek, and North Chagrin.
Great. Thanks. Kelly? Good morning. Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
So today our focus is really on the draft reservation plan updates that are underway, but I also thought I'd kind of take a pause and give a little bit more of the framework and the background. Everyone loves to hear about planning at Cleveland Metro Parks. Oh, Joe's leaving, see? but our department, I work with Sean, and we are really a self-sufficient, almost kind of a multidisciplinary consultant firm that we can take any idea basically from initial inspiration through construction. And it's a great group to work with. So planning is housed within planning and design, but then we're able to execute and develop these great plans by working with the experts in our other departments. So the different departments that are listed up here, you see, you know, a wide range of expertise that we factor into the planning process. So I'm going to talk a little bit about, you know, some of the planning work we do, today's draft plans, and then some of the next steps. So to give a little bit more background, Cleveland Metro Parks is part of the National Recreation and Park Association, and that is really, you know, it's the national organization that really sets the standard for best practices and kind of innovation in parks. And through the NRPA, they have a certification program that is called CAPRA, that maybe is a little bit of a blessing and a curse. I don't know, coworkers. But there are about 300 standards that CAPRA looks to agencies to attain to maintain that CAPRA accreditation. So you know, that's one of the key components of the work we do, making sure that we do maintain that CAPRA accreditation, which leads to the ability to pursue the national gold medal. And so, you know, all these things kind of line up, but the gold medal really recognizes leadership throughout the country in attaining kind of the best of the best. And we are really proud as an organization that we've attained the gold medal 5 times. You can only apply, I think, every, is it five years? So that'll be coming up again in a few years. But again, this is kind of that world that we operate within. And so one of the key components of CAPRA is maintaining certain plans that are up to date. And so we updated our second century of stewardship plan a few years ago. We have kind of a summary document that I left on the desk. And then this is really the full document where we have all the appendices that kind of check all the boxes for CAPRA. So that's where we're doing, you know, a periodic survey. We maintain the reservation master plans. We do an inventory of what other providers are out there. So it's a very, you know, it's a very complex diagram or complex document, but I'm just kind of laying that out to show how the reservation plans kind of fit into this system of plans. And so we are working under our mission statement, protecting nature, connecting communities, and inspiring conservation of our world. And we translate that mission to action with our 6 core goals. And they're very purposefully action words, but these 6 core goals really encompass the wide variety of activities that we take on as a park district, including the zoo, golf courses. You know, it's a framework where we really can look to take that mission and put it into action. And so one way we do that is through the park master plans. So this year we are looking at Euclid Creek, Acacia, and North Chagrin. We have kind of a rotating update system that we get to each park kind of every 6 to 8 years and kind of dig in and look at the issues and kind of set a course for those parks. So the process, we begin the process, we kick it off kind of early in the year, but we convene a stakeholder committee from all those departments you saw on the first slide. And so we're up to roughly about 30 folks that participate in these meetings. And it's really a way to kind of examine the parks, look at ways we can improve them, look at ways, you know, we take that stewardship mission very seriously, but, you know, what actions are needed. And some of the actions, you know, sometimes it's hard to keep up with my coworkers. Sometimes they've already completed the action before the plan is finished. But some of those actions need a much longer timeline. They need to fundraise. They might be 10 to 20 years out. So going through this process, we've developed draft plans that you'll see today. They are posted online on our website. We've coordinated with staff and elected officials at all our surrounding communities, surrounding those parks. And then we're holding community open houses. The first one's next week. We have one kind of at each park, and then we're going to have an online version. So we'll take that input, we'll update the plans, and then we'll provide the final plans by the end of the year. So looking quickly at Acacia, Acacia's been a really dynamic park, you know, since the park's only been open about 10 years and major restoration initiatives, a lot of work going into, you know, take this former golf course and really turn it into a natural area park. So some of the actions are just related to looking in the center of the park. We have some duplicate trails. Can we kind of conserve more habitat area in that core of the park and continue to let people use those multiple trails throughout the park? One thing that might be a little confusing, we have some conservation areas that are kind of crosshatched, and those are areas where we completed habitat restoration work and they now have a covenant. So there's no development in those areas. Through the operation of the park, we've really learned that our focus on kind of the more active uses and the facilities is going to be kind of in the southern area close to Cedar Road where we have the existing parking lot. And so as an example, you know, we break off areas that need kind of more detailed study, and this is just a plan that's underway, but how, you know we need to kind of renovate that parking lot. Here's one potential idea. The shelter has recently opened to the public as a rental facility, and we're going to be adding to that with a patio. It has public restrooms, and there's a great kind of open porch area, which I've seen people utilize. It's a great meeting spot. One time when I was out, there was someone practicing their cello at the park. It was lovely. So again, we'll drill down and look in a little more detail to help guide future actions. And this is just an example here at Acacia. Moving on.
Before you go to that, I see you want to remove some of the gazebos at Acacia. Why would you do that?
The gazebos were kind of relics from the operation as a golf course, and many of them have kind of fallen into disrepair. The design of them also, they really have a lot of bird's nests in them, and so it's just kind of a constant battle to clean up the mess from the birds. And, you know, there's, that'll be something we'll talk about. I've already gotten one public comment asking to keep at least one, and so that's something we might consider, but they don't really fit the current use as the park. We don't have kind of shelters out along trails in most areas.
But where you already have them, it may be a nice idea to keep them, particularly if it suddenly starts raining. It's sort of nice to be able to pop into one of them.
That is always nice, and we can consider that. I think we're just at the point that we're either going to need to invest heavily in them to maintain them, or you know, maybe we can find a balance somewhere. Definitely. Moving on to Euclid Creek is a really exciting park. To think that a park that was really surrounded by development was able to grow by 84 acres since the last time we did a park plan is really impressive. And I think it's really been able to expand and change the character of the park. One of those areas where it's expanded is the former Central Middle School site. And through the work of the team and of colleagues, you know, there's already an expanded all-purpose trail in place that takes you up to Euclid Avenue. And then this piece is being constructed this fall, and there's funding to develop a plan to link this main portion of Euclid Creek Reservation with the lakefront. And so you'll be hearing more about that through the RAISE program. So one of the focus areas for the plan is to kind of get some more community input about, you know, what's the best use of this new area. And then looking to the main body of the park, one of the bridge projects that Sean was referencing earlier is replacing the old Highland Bridge, which will be a much needed improvement. And then just as we look to replace and maintain infrastructure, there are some improvements needed at the Highland Picnic Area. We know that there are some kind of just aging out issues with some of the walls along the creek. And then another idea that's come to us is, can we do some traffic calming along the main portion of the parkway? So you'll see this little symbol in several areas. And we have some ideas from a previous Transportation for Livable Communities Initiative study that looked at, you know, maybe we can do a refuge island in the center. Maybe we can do, you know, just some treatments maybe at those intersections. So we'll be studying that further. Could you advance the slide? This isn't, I'm not having luck with the clicker. Great, thank you. So this is a graphic that shows that former Euclid Central Middle School site. So this is Euclid Avenue. This is where the trail that was just built comes up from the main part of the park. And the trail will continue through this parcel. Natural Resources is doing a decompaction study in this area. And we're going to ask the public, we actually have even changed since I put my presentation together. We're going to ask them to put a sticker, you know, if we build a shelter, where would you like to see that shelter placed? So it'll be kind of a fun interactive piece, but this is going to become, I'm sure, a new highly used portion of the park, because we know that Euclid Creek does get a lot of visitors. A lot of people like to have family parties at the shelters. So this will be an exciting addition. So moving south through the park, again, just looking at some of those traffic calming opportunities, are there areas where we can protect some of this, the water course, and improving wayfinding in a few areas? But, you know, this is a park that is just loved by the neighbors and visited really frequently. So we're excited to go out and have those community meetings to hear from folks. Taking us over to North Chagrin now, you'll notice our map itself looks a little different because this portion of the park is in Lake County, so we don't have quite the level of background detail. But looking at, you know, the proximity of Manikiki to the main portion of the park, we've had talks previously with Willoughby Hills about a potential connector trail to connect some of their parks and our park. We've looked at a reconfiguration of the park entrance off Chardon Road, similar to what took place at Euclid. And then, you know, some updates at Squire's Castle, kind of upgrading the restroom there.
Is that municipal property off of Chardon Road, the western section, where you've got this the trail one. Connected?
Mm-hmm. This is kind of there. There's a fire station,
right.
Service yard. So I have a meeting coming up Monday with Willoughby Hills, so we'll kind of see, you know, there if they still have the same urgency that this idea had previously. But the idea,
a lot of people running for mayor there too.
Yeah, well,
you do.
So it'll be an interesting conversation. The thought too was that it's just a way that we can kind of expand the experience for North Chagrin visitors, that they could actually hike or bike up and have lunch at the clubhouse and enjoy the beautiful scenery at Manikiki. So again, we'll continue to kind of flesh out these ideas, mm-hmm. and the final version may or may not have that idea on it. Then through the main body of the park, you know, we have kind of an overarching goal of reducing duplicate trails and improving the system itself. So it's a good place where, you know, some of my colleagues in natural resources help keep me in check when I draw too many dotted lines. But we're trying to look at a couple key places where we could better connect or formalize the riverside trails versus the upland trails, so that you could go out and have an experience where you kind of get the best of both, that you're hiking along the ravines, but then it's easy to navigate and get down and hike along the river itself. You know, other than that, we have made some great changes since the last plan. You know, we took out kind of this additional road that wasn't really needed, great restoration work, trail improvement, wayfinding improvements have already really taken place. The crosshatching on this near Somme represents some wetland restoration work that Natural Resources is leading. And so, you know, these parks, even though some of them are 100 years old, really continue to evolve and kind of move to the future. Then the southern part of the park, you know, most of the visitor areas are north of Wilson Mills Road here. And, you know, we just completed the Foster's Run restoration. So, you know, there's a lot to explore within the park, but we have some properties that are more conservation kind of heading south. And so there is the Buckeye Trail route along River Road and portions of that area. There's kind of a question if there's eventually an opportunity to improve access that it's off the road, but I think that's really going to be kind of a question for the future, probably.
But shouldn't we have a plan that to acknowledge Stitchcomb's original idea of connecting these north and south? I mean, I would think on our planning, we should have at least a plan that shows that we're interested in that. To not have it in a plan, I think, makes it look like, you know, we're not interested in that fundamental concept of having the Emerald Necklace completely connected.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do show the existing designation of the Buckeye Trail, and we do note along the Chagrin River corridor to explore those opportunities. That balance that we get into is a lot of the privately held property in that vicinity. To show an actual line on the map
creates issues.
is a little challenging, yes. But definitely, I hear what you're saying, and that's something that we can kind of bring up for additional discussion, definitely.
But I mean, particularly north of Mayfield, we have a substantial amount of the property, I guess, don't we? Like just north of Mayfield, we have.
We have.
That's lot, and then I guess there's an opening.
Some of these, yeah, I've studied it a bit, and when you get into kind of, again, that balance, the crosshatch here is all wetland area, and, you know, trying to balance the habitat versus access, and then the number of gaps and the number of river crossings. But again, I think it's an idea that can be discussed and explored. There is great use of River Road right now by cyclists, and, you know, with the Buckeye Trail designation, I think that's an interesting component.
But if you've ridden on River Road, and I do all the time, you know, they've expanded, I think, 2 feet or something, mm-hmm. you know, between Gates Mills and Hunting Valley. It doesn't move the needle, I don't think.
Yeah, it's definitely a complicated issue.
Could there be some way to show it in a plan, even though you don't have a specific spot defined, you know, a specific, just to acknowledge that that's something that we want to do?
I think I haven't heard back from leadership at Gates Mills. I think that could be a discussion since most of that area is within Gates Mills. I know in their comprehensive plan for their community, they've talked about building some trails in some of their conservation areas. So maybe it's something that could happen over time.
Well, I think, I mean, a couple of years ago, we put together collectively the park projecting alternative trails, and it almost created World War III.
Well, I have a binder this thick of letters
to my desk. Yes, but they'd see it. So, and the only other alternative is River Road, unless you can knit together pieces of property. And I think the point is that unless there's a will, the way forward there still remains very challenging, other than through River Road right away.
But we're the only people that'll be able to do it. I mean, so there's no one else that I mean, so I think we have to look at that. I don't know how you put it on a plan. I don't think driving on River Road, someone's going to get nailed on River Road. It's just a matter of time.
It's
a lot of
right. No, there's no question.
A lot of right. Old Gates Mills residents don't see very well.
I say nothing.
Yeah, so thank you for the input, and we'll kind of continue to consider that as the plans get refined. So I put some flyers out on the podium, so hopefully folks saw the upcoming open houses starting next week. Again, you can go to our website right now, and the plans are posted, and there's also a comment form.
Excellent. I'm putting it out there. That's
great. Yeah, and it's great to hear from people, to hear from the community. I feel like the role of the planner here is really as convener and trying to listen to these different ideas and, you know, set forth a plan that represents them. We'll be finishing up the plans this year, and then next year the cycle will move kind of to the southeast part of the park district with South Chagrin, Bedford, Brecksville, and Hinckley reservations. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. That completes our information items. Let the record reflect I enjoy the planning process very much. Thank you. Moving on, we have no old business. Date of our next meeting will be at a new location at the Jack, Joseph, and Morton Mandel Auditorium, recently renovated at the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo. That'll be on October 19th at 8 a.m. I believe we have executive session, Rose.
Yes. Is there a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of the purchase or acquisition of real property?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Bruce Rinker.
Aye.
Yvette Itu.
Aye.
Dan Moore.
Yes.
That concludes our meeting. For any business, we will transact no further business.